This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This podcast is proudly in association with HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a subscription-based meal kit company that delivers amazing recipes straight to your door. On the app, you'll be able to choose your weekly recipes to meal plan your week. They deliver fresh ingredients straight to your door to make the recipes that have carefully been selected. With step-by-step recipe cards, there's no need to be a chef to cook delicious meals. You have full flexibility on what meals you get and when you get them. It's easy to add extra portions, change recipes, modify your delivery time, or pause your deliveries. We are also delighted to offer a 60% discount to West Ham fans on the first box and then a 25% discount on the following 2 months when you use the code WESTHAMWAY in capital letters. So download the HelloFresh app or visit the website www.hellofresh.co.uk/WESTHAMWAY to get these delicious, easy to make meals sent straight to your door. HelloFresh, dinner is solved.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WH employee. We were cruising at St James's Park only for a poor managerial decision from Moyes that changed everything. With only two Premier League wins in 2024, it's actually quite amazing that we're still seventh in the league. We talk about that game, Calvin Phillips and Tottenham at home before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. Let's cut straight to the chase. Newcastle 4, West Ham 3. The game had everything, absolutely everything. Quality goals, poor defending, play acting, injuries, controversy. And somehow we've come away with nothing. Give us your thoughts.
Very, very disappointed, as I guess everyone is. You know, we were there, they were there for the taking. They had lots of injuries. We were 3-1 up. We were playing well. And, you know, we've capitulated with 25 minutes or whatever it was left to go. It's massively frustrating because a result against Newcastle would have put us in a very healthy position in the league. You know, we would have obviously seen us a swing of 6 points on them, and they're a direct rival to us in the league at the moment. So that's seventh place. God knows how we're still holding on to it by the skin of our teeth. But you know, it's there for the taking. It seems, and again, results went our way this weekend. So if we'd got that result, which we should have got, made a massive difference, of course. VAR and the refs are never far from anything to do with us nowadays, and that had an impact. And then again, you can have a question of substitutions as well by the manager. So frustrating day at the office all round, I would say, really.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I tell you what, you make a really good point there as well. I have to say, I agree. I'm genuinely astonished by the fact that we are still seventh. We've won two games this calendar year. We're in April now. The fucking season finishes next month. I don't know how, honestly, mathematically, I don't know how we're still seventh. It's incredible. Yeah. We've only two wins registered this year. It's quite amazing. Well, I mean, it was a funny old game, wasn't it? It was evident early on that Schuffel was going to have a tough day. I mean, Gordon was a real problem for him, as he was for us in general, getting two penalties, obviously. it's hard to try and find positives from such a devastating result because we were so close to the win. But having said that, I think to be 1-0 down and come back the way we did away from home, I think showed a lot of character and a lot of quality at times. And to be 3-1 up after nearly 70 minutes, I think was a good thing. I think, again, the devastating trio of Bowen, Pakatar and Kudus were a joy to watch at times. Antonio took his goal really well. I thought Mavropanos had a good game, ironically, being part of a defence conceding 4 goals. But I thought he was one of our best players as well. Mm. And everything was sweet around 70 minutes and we were in complete control. So much so that at times we were putting 10, 20 passes together and fucking olaying them. Do you know what I mean? We were taking the piss. Yeah. And then the defining moment in that game, because despite being in complete control, Moyes decides to take Antonio off and replace him with a desperately out-of-form Calvin Phillips. And that decision completely changed the dynamic of the game. We lost control, we lost momentum, we invited unnecessary pressure like we always do. And ultimately, we've conceded 3 goals and lost the game. I mean, was this another cowardly tactic from Moyes, or do you sympathise with his attempt at closing the game off?
I keep changing my mind. If I'm honest with you, mate, I really do. I keep changing my mind on this because it's accepted, I think, in West Ham circles now that Antonio cannot play beyond the 70th minute. Like, you look at every game he started for West Ham, pretty much this. And if he was to go through, I haven't obviously done the maths on this, but I'd imagine the percentage is over 90% that he's came off before the 70th minute. So that decision was probably going to happen anyway because he does blow out of his arse. And they've also got to manage his fitness, so ideally you would have kept Antonio on because he was running and ragging and he was playing well, but it's just accepted that physically he can't now, it seems. So especially with a game against Tottenham, you know, a few days later, so I kind of understand that substitution logically. And then logically, if you was to say you're 3-1 up with like what was 20 minutes to go, it does make sense to bring on a defensive midfielder to try and close that game out. It does, when you look at it like that. However, by doing that, he brought, as you said there, he brought an out-of-form player who I feel sorry for the lad. I mean, I know he's not helped himself by sticking the middle finger up to West Ham fans, and that's not acceptable. But I do feel sorry for the lad because, by all accounts, he's a really top fella. You know, everyone I speak to that knows him says he's a top fella. He's not doing this on purpose. You know, you might think he's on shitloads. He doesn't care. He does care, you know, because this is his career at stake here. And short term, getting into the England Euro squad, which he must have blown all his chances of doing now. So I do feel sorry for him. But as you said, he's out of form. And he came on, and then we had no outlet up front because whilst Bowen tries up there, he hasn't got the same physical presence that Antonio has at running the defence. So it invited pressure onto us. We almost sat back and invited pressure on us. If he'd brought a like for like on, if he'd brought Ings on maybe, or Mbama, or even Cornet, just to run at them a little bit from the top, I think you could say that, you know, he's gone like for like, we're playing well, that's fine. But, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, it does look like that decision cost us the game. And again, Moyes' instinct is to try and close out a game and go defensive rather than attack and score a fourth goal. So my mind is really split because I know I'm arguing both sides here. I can understand the logic of bringing on a defensive midfielder. And of course, the penalty that Phillips gave away is really, really harsh. And that's what swung the game at that point. So you could say that's taken the decision to be worse than it should have been. But then the argument is, why does Moyes always sit back? And when we were doing really well anyway, we didn't necessarily need to change it. And in terms of formation, so I'm not deliberately sitting on the fence with this, but I can almost be persuaded either way on it, I think.
I think you're right. It's typical when you're maybe up by 2 goals and there's 20 minutes left that you'll make a defensive change. We see that in football all the time. What I really struggled with was his reading of the game. And the decision that he's made based on how he saw our performance at the time against Newcastle. Because if we were being overrun in midfield, for example, and our league was being threatened, I would understand it. But we weren't. Yeah. We was on top. And I was actually enjoying us, seeing us keep the fucking ball for once. And actually, keep it and enjoy the football and control the game. And Newcastle were dead. They were flat. They were finished. They were completely out of ideas. And it was just such an unnecessary change. Yes, we accept that Antonio's got to go off. Put Danny Ings on. You know, don't fix it if it's not broken. We didn't need to change it up. in terms of formation and tactic. Everything that we was doing was working, and we were 20 minutes away from getting the win. And David Moyes, once again, he's bottled it. I think he's been a coward with his tactics, and I think he underestimates his attacking players. I really
do.
Yeah. We've got some.
And maybe overestimates his defensive ones.
He does. I think you're right. And it just constantly blows my mind that for a defensive minded manager, how many goals we actually concede. It's quite incredible. And I couldn't get my head around it. And for me, I absolutely put that defeat at the hands of David Moyes. I really do. And
yeah,
I was absolutely gutted.
Yeah. The manager does have to take responsibility for that because he's made a substitution where he's changed the team. And it's caused us to be on the back foot and then concede three goals in 20 minutes. The other thing as well that shows that he must have thought he made a mistake was that when it was all starting to capitulate, he brought on Danny Ings at the end. So he then tried to revert back to what we were already in before that situation. So it shows that he obviously realised that there was a mistake, and it is massively frustrating because that win against Newcastle would have been huge for us, going, as I say, the league table, going into the game and against Spurs on tomorrow. And it is massively frustrating, and he does have to take responsibility for that. I mean, of course, this is an ongoing question mark over him about his substitutions. It really is. And this is something, you know, when you weigh up the pros and cons of whether he should be the manager going into the future, then definitely one of the cons is his in-game substitutions, because there are times he gets it right, but it does seem the majority of the time the substitutions are questionable. And Newcastle, let's be honest, were there for the taking. They had so many injuries. They had so many injuries going on during the bloody game. That's the only reason Harvey Barnes was on the pitch, ironically, because there'd been so many injuries prior to that. But he's really... He really doesn't help himself, David Moyes, because, you know, it's very well known, as we talk about each week, that there's critics, and he's got a lot of haters that are very hard for him to get off his back now. And when things like that happen, it just fuels their opinions. And so he doesn't help himself at all. You know, you do have to bear in mind the harshness of some decisions as well. That is a factor in what happened against Newcastle, but you're right, it was ultimately that substitution and the fact that he always feels the need to go to close off a game by defending rather than close off a game by scoring another goal that's ultimately cost him that.
I mean, we have to talk about Calvin Phillips again, because prior to him coming to West Ham, I liked him. I rated him. Yeah. I liked him as a character. I liked him for England alongside Declan Rice. And I was really excited by the fact that he was going to come on loan. And I actually was praying it would work out so we could get him on a permanent. You know, even though he's not a priority position, I think his sort of character and being homegrown and the quality that he's shown would be a good fit for West Ham. I can't believe how fucking bad he's been. I honestly can't believe it. And maybe you can shed some light on this. I don't know. But of course, when you're out of football for as long as he has been, you're going to get some ring rust. And I think we all accepted that. And the first few games, you could say, fair enough. And I give him a chance and he's still trying to find his feet again. But at what point do we say this just isn't going to work? Because, not being funny, it's not as if he plays a game for West Ham and he goes and sits in a hospital bed till the next game. He trains every day. So physically, he must be good enough by now. And you can't, I don't think, no longer say he's still severely lacking match practice, because he has been getting games for West Ham, but he's just been diabolical when he's played. I mean, he was so far off it against Newcastle. We're going to talk about the penalty in a minute. I mean, we can talk about the harshness of the officiating all we like. He was going at snail's pace to clear that ball, which has put him in a position where he's made the foul. And then for the last goal, the winning goal from Harvey Barnes, his second, it turned Phillips so easily. It's like he's running with treacle. And I don't know with Calvin if the issue is physical or psychological or both. But I hope it's physical, because if it's psychological or it's both, he's fucked.
Yeah.
It's too much of a nice lad for that to happen at his age in his career. But there has to be some explanation for it, X, because honestly, when I think about some of the worst signings in West Ham's history, Calvin's got to be up there. He has to be so far, purely because of the wage that we're paying him as well. Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Well, the only one I can think of that being worse at the moment is Roberto, because then he... Yeah. But then when you put it in comparison, he was a backup keeper that was on a free transfer. So, the finances are completely different.
On a quarter of a wage as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the there is a massive issue here because, as we say, we're paying him a ridiculous amount of money. We paid, I think, $7 million to sign him on loan, and we're paying like over £100,000 a week to, you know, for his wages. And it is a massive concern because you're right. You know, you and I said this to each other at the game. It's not like he's been injured for a year. You know, he's been like in Manchester City squads. You know, he might not have started their games, but he's been on their subs bench, which means he's trained every week. You know, he's just had 2 weeks off with West Ham, like the other players, because of international break and stuff, so he could be working on his fitness then. I don't understand what's happened to him, because he is a good player, or was a good player. You know, you don't play for England as many times as he has and be signed by Pep Guardiola to play for Manchester City. I know he hasn't really played, but, you know, the theory was there that he was good enough to play for Man City if you're not good. You know, so he is a good player. I don't know what has happened to him. I think, obviously, a couple of bad performances has put him psychologically, probably lacking a bit of confidence. You know, he needed that game to come on and close it out and play well. He's played terribly. As you say, the fourth goal's massively his fault, as well as the penalty. And I think it's just building up this case. And you know, when the chips are down, the worst thing you need is further, like, you know, evidence that things aren't going well. And that's just all that seems to be happening at the moment. And, you know, then he's had the incident with the coach at the end of the game. And, you know, to be fair, I don't agree with going and abusing players. However, the person that did abuse him said something like, "You're useless." It's not like he gave him, you know, a ton of abuse. He just said, "You're useless." He's not helped himself by sticking his middle finger up. I get his frustrations. He's probably very depressed with how it's all going. I think anyone would be. You know, you'd hope he'd had a bit more professionalism in that incident to not stick his middle finger up. But at the same time, I can get the frustration. It's a real difficult situation to know what to do with him, because there's part of me now that thinks if we contact Manchester City and just say, "Look, lads, this isn't working out for us. We've paid the $7 million for him. Okay, but we're obviously paying the wage as well. Would you take him back? We can't get the money back, but you take the wages off our hands now." Part of me would be tempted to do that, because it's going to start getting a little bit toxic for him and any selection he has. It's also stopping the likes of Lewis Orford, who is a talented central midfielder that's got more of a future at West Ham than Calvin Phillips has, because surely we're not going to sign him next year now. So I would rather, in a way, just put Phillips out now and put Orford in and try and build up an academy lad instead, because let's be honest, whether Lewis Orford's ready or not, I think he is, but he, you know, there's no evidence either way yet in terms of the first team. But if he can't do much worse, can he? Let's be honest. And as a young lad, if he does do worse, it's only going to help him build up experience for the future, because he's just turned 18. So it's a real difficult situation. But then I'm just in its mind with everything at the moment, and that's why I'm not a football manager, but part of me just thinks, right, actually throw him in against Spurs, because if he wants to turn it around as quickly as possible, having a man of the match performance against our rivals and us winning the game would be a very quick way to sort this problem out. But then you've got the risk of, is he going to capitulate again and cost us another game? So again, it's a tough decision what to do with him.
Yeah, I think, you know, the ongoing debate over where he is psychologically is a concern. And I honestly, I pray to God that he is okay and that this isn't going to affect his career like it did, like Ravel Morrison, for example. But the trouble is, X, I don't think you can throw him into any game at the moment, because I just don't think he looks physically able. He was so far off it against Newcastle.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've often said on this show, and it's obvious to anyone listening that watches Premier League football, pace and athleticism is crucial now in pretty much every area of the pitch. And he's so far off it, Calvin, he's just going to get overrun. And then that's going to just expose us. You know, and our defence is dodgy at the best of times this season. We're going to be piled on by Tottenham. And then we could get a pummeling on the back of physically not being able to contain them and match them like for like in midfield. So I honestly, I feel so sad saying this, but I would seriously, unless I see a dramatic change physically and psychologically in training, then I wouldn't. I don't think I'd give him another game. What we got now? Eight games left. I think there's better options that can come in.
It's so sad. It is sad, and as you say, it's a real concern how someone can be that different to what you expected in terms of expectations when you signed them? Because, you know, we all thought, and I don't think there was many, but, you know, there was people that said, why are we signing? We don't need that position, which I understand. But when you look at the calibre of the player, I think most people were happy with the signing at the time. And now, I certainly was as well. And with the benefit of hindsight, it's proven to be a disastrous signing. And, you know, we've got an issue at the moment because James Ward-Prowse is not performing either. You know, and that's another expensive English midfielder in there that's not really doing much. And, you know, you take, you know, Alvarez out of that team, and I don't know what the stats are, but every time Alvarez doesn't play, we look very, very vulnerable to conceding. So he's just shown what a key player he is to us. And, you know, I am very torn as what to do with Calvin Phillips. And I think if we used to play Tottenham, which we are, we're playing Tottenham tomorrow, and a team comes out, I think if Calvin Phillips starts in that game, which I'd be very surprised if he does, there's going to be a bit of an atmosphere around that negatively, I would say. And then you think of it on the flip side, if Lewis Orford, for example, he's the most obvious one to me, comes in, then there'll be a bit of a buzz. Academy lad in, let's see how he does. You know, it'll be a big game to throw him into. But it's that the fan base is on such a kind of, I don't know what the word is, thin ice at the moment in terms of it's like its dealings with the club. You know, you've got the Moyes in and outs, you've got Phillips situation, you've got this very like borderline, ready to either be very supportive or very explosive. And I think, you know, some of these coming games, decisions are crucial. You know, if we beat Tottenham tomorrow, everything suddenly feels different again, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so, I know. It's so up and down. It has been like that all season. And not forgetting, if we get to the semi-final of the Europa League.
Exactly.
Then, you know, we're on an absolute high. But, you know, again, you look at it, how many tough games have we had? And you can only beat who's in front of you, but how many tough games have we had to get to Leverkusen? And then if we do go out, that's going to be a problem. I think you're right. There are actually quite a few issues at the moment. And one of the issues as well is one that we have constantly highlighted on this podcast. You've got some great academy kids there that could potentially go on to become great players in the Premier League because, you know, they're spoken about so much in terms of their performance and their potential. Again, you look at the parents of a lot of the kids we're talking about are West Ham fans. And they're going to be in a really difficult position in the summer because, you know, they're going to want, it's going to be a dream for them to see their kid being given an opportunity at West Ham. But at the same time, they've got to protect their kid's career and their career paths. And if number one, they're not getting an opportunity, that's one thing. But if number two, they're not getting an opportunity over the likes of Calvin Phillips, then they've got to have a conversation at some point. As if to say, is my boy going to be a part of this club's future or not? Because if he isn't, it'll break my heart. I've got to send him somewhere else. You know?
Well, yeah, and I know that some will be getting frustrated because rightly so you would do because the main comparison for me at the moment is, you know, I, as the people know, I haven't been very well recently, so I just basically stayed in yesterday and watched football. So I watched the Liverpool game and the Liverpool team, which, you know, this is the team that are going for the title, you know, the Klopp's last season, and he's got three or four players in that starting 11 that are basically no older than 21. Now, West Ham's academy is better than Liverpool's academy, as was proven, last season with the success they had, yet their players are playing for Liverpool in a title-challenging game, and that game against Brighton was massive for them, particularly, you know, with Man City playing Arsenal and both of them dropping 2 points. So that was a massive game, yet he put his trust in those academy players, whereas at West Ham, we don't even trust them to come on for 5 minutes at the end. You know, and that is a dead game. You know, that is the difference, and it does concern me because, you know, you just have to put it relevant. I hate keep saying his name, but if Declan Rice hadn't been given the chance, you know, we'd have lost a captain, £105 million, etc. And the same could happen with these players, and it is a frustration for me. And what is frustrating, and this is where I have my issues with Moyes, is that most managers nowadays, if you look at most clubs, even the top clubs, most of them are playing youngsters. You know, Manchester City had Rico Lewis come on when Ake got injured. He's 19. You know, they've got young player. Their bench had three or four of the youngsters on it. Liverpool have done the same. You know, Arsenal, maybe not any in the starting 11 yesterday, but, you know, the likes of Martinelli and Saka have come through their academy. And then, you know, you go through all of them. Every Chelsea have been playing youngsters through their academy as well. And you just think, my word, we're like the only team that doesn't at the moment, yet we've probably got some of the best players. So it is massively frustrating. And, you know, next season, we're going to have to start looking at it, because we're going to have, if we sell Aaron Cresswell, or Aaron Cresswell goes, his contract's up, Johnson goes, potentially Antonio, potentially Ings, you know, literally have no homegrown players left unless we play some of these academy lads. So yeah, it's definitely an ongoing issue, I would say, definitely. And, it's, yeah. and when I think about Moyes, and whether I'm a Moyes in or a Moyes out, this is the side that pushes me to Moyes out more so than anything, I think.
Well, for what it's worth, let's talk about that penalty that Calvin gave away. Was it or wasn't it the right decision, in your opinion?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm so torn again. I know I've literally got splinters up my arse this episode because I'm so sitting on the fence. But again, I am genuinely torn because in theory, Gordon's almost fouled Phillips. Phillips goes to clear the ball and the guy's got in the way, so he can't clear the ball. So in theory, that's the case. If you apply logic to the situation, Phillips has no idea that he's there. He just goes to kick the ball. Gordon happens to stick his leg in the way. So if you apply logic to it, that shouldn't be a penalty. But then if you apply the letter of the law, which I guess is if someone kicks the opponent in the penalty area, clearly, which causes them to be unable to play the ball or whatever, then it's a foul. So... You know, I think it's very, very harsh. Very, very harsh that's happened. I can see an argument either way. I think if it had been against us, you know, the other way, I think we'd have been upset that we didn't get a penalty, but we probably would have understood it. And that's a little bit where I am with this. I think it's harsh. I think he's very unlucky that that's been given. I can see that given as a foul, to be fair, to West Ham. But with VAR and with all the rules at the moment, no one really knows whether you can apply logic to the situation. If you're allowed to apply logic, then it's not a foul. But if you're going literally by the rule, physical contact on the opposing player without playing the ball, then it is a foul.
Yeah, I can't really add to that, mate. I agree with you word for word. It's a strange one. And again, it comes down to my modern day lack of understanding of the rules. I used to, when football was simple, I think I used to get everything. I understood everything by the letter of the law. Now, I don't think I understand fuck all. What's offside, what's handball, what's a foul, you know? It's just so overcomplicated these days.
Well, exactly. And they've taken away the ability to apply logic to a situation.
Exactly.
You know, where VAR is, you know, computer-generated images and those goal line technology and stuff, it take, you know, goal line, whether the ball's over the line or not is a fact. It either is or it isn't. But other situations like that penalty, like offsides, whether they're interfering with play, like handball, and whether it's intentional and whether it's affected the game or not, are down to the current situation that's happened and applying logic. And it's almost like we've stripped away the logic from the officials now, and it literally has to be factual or not, because in that scenario it's unfair on Calvin Phillips. He goes to kick the ball, doesn't know the guy's there, the guy's stuck his leg in the way, and as I said earlier, in theory that could be a foul to West Ham because he's blocked his kicking leg. But you know, it depends where we are with officiating at the moment, because it's the same with handball. You know, look at the game against Aston Villa for us a couple of weeks ago. You know, those handballs were technically handballs, but did they actually affect the course of the direction of the ball? Maybe not. And then I just, you know, it's at the moment the game's so fucking overcomplicated. You talk more about officiating now with all these advances and technology and professional refs than you did when you had fucking Bob Smith Smith turn up after his milk round. You know, and yeah,
it's so ridiculous. Yeah, it's so true. It should be taking away talking points in football because VAR is supposed to give clarity on clear and obvious decisions. But it's, for me, it's just a handy tool for corruption and completely useless, if you ask me. I think it's been nothing but detrimental to the game. It really has.
Yeah, and you could get... Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you get back in the day when a ref made a bad decision, of course, you'd go down the pub or, you know, wherever, and you'd moan about it. You'd say, oh, I fucking hate that ref. He never gives us anything and stuff. But you could still put it down to a human judgment. And everything about football is human judgment, you know, whether the striker blasts a penalty or chips it or puts it to the left or to the right. It's a game based on human judgment. So if the refs make mistakes, it frustrates you and you have an issue with it and you moan about it, but ultimately you can put it down. There's a human judgment. When the fact that technology not only delays the game by the amount of time that it does every fucking time there's a decision, but it also then means that they still get it wrong and sometimes almost seem to get it wrong on purpose, then it makes it even more of an issue. That there's got to be a rule, and it will come up in the final section of this podcast, but there's got to be a rule on whether it's clear and obvious. That needs to be made clear, that if the ref makes a decision on the pitch, unless there's something massively obviously wrong about it, then the decision stands. This whole 4, 5, 6 minute delays to make a decision show that it's not clear and obvious. Yeah. So therefore, if it takes more than, say, 30 seconds to make a decision, then you don't make a decision, you go with what the refs decided on the pitch. And that should be a simple change. It would stop this fucking massive delays all the time. It would make it clear and obvious, and actually by the definition of what clear and obvious is, and it would make the game more enjoyable. And I just think these things are so obvious, in my opinion, that I can't see why they haven't been done.
Totally agree. Here's what Moyes had to say after the game.
I suppose your assessment of a game that an unbelievable afternoon, really.
Yeah, but nothing unbelievable about it for me. Disappointment more than anything. That we didn't win the game more than anything. And ultimately, we should have come away with points from the game. We didn't do so.
What did you think was the turning point? Because obviously at 3-1 up, we looked in a good position.
Well, I think the penalty kick's a huge turning point. But I also think that, you know, we made a change because we felt as if they had gotten top, they'd missed a couple of chances. We tried to give ourselves another midfield player at 3-1 up. We didn't want to wait till it had gone to 3-2. Probably that decision probably didn't work on the day. But more importantly, I think the boy puts his foot in front of Calvin. I don't know how Calvin's supposed to see his leg and puts it in front of him and earns a penalty kick, which makes it 3-2. And that, for all we're saying, is, you know, that we ended up, we had been doing okay. We'd been giving up a couple of chances before that, which I didn't like. They had started to get a bit more control, certainly shooting down the hill. We had another day where we just did very few things went for us.
Disappointing, probably more so, because we look like we've shown such resilience to come back from 1-0 in the first place.
Yeah, and got ourselves back in front and done a lot of good things. We looked a real threat. Our attacking play was a real threat most of the day. We just couldn't sort of, you know, when we needed this to be defensively sound, we couldn't be defensively sound. And let's be fair, we've had that issue many times this season already.
Obviously, frustration will be felt, you know, with everyone associated with the club, but, you know, you feel that too, obviously.
I'm gutted, you know, absolutely. You know, we've come here, we should be 3-1 up, we're trying to challenge for Europe, we're trying to beat one of the teams who are close to us, and for long periods it looked like we were. We scored some good goals, we've tried to put them under pressure, but when we get 3-1 up, we're just not showing the elements of defensive duty which you have to do and be good enough to match the teams and stop them scoring. It looked too easy for me, but I have to say that so many decisions went against us today. It was, in some ways it's quite difficult.
There was one, I think, just before we scored the third goal, where you looked particularly annoyed about when Mo went clean through. Obviously, if that decision goes another way, it's potentially their
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've not even had a chance to look at that yet. My feeling was that he pushed Mo in the back when Mo was going through and goal. You know, that would have been a red card. You know, could have changed the game at that point. It didn't. So if you're talking about small decisions, you never considered looking at it, but they were happy to look at all their other ones that they had.
Just lastly then, I suppose it's one game, We've got another one Tuesday night, and you know, you're going to get everybody together and get us up, and hopefully we can get a win Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll have to try and do that as well. We've got to get ourselves back on it and you know, show more resilience and toughness than we did. Didn't show enough toughness when it was 3-1 and we needed it, and we went 3-2. We had to show real toughness. We didn't show it.
Well, Lex, once again, he's aggrieved at some of the decisions that went against us. And I think he makes a good point, actually, when it comes to the push on Kudus, especially. But aren't you getting bored of constantly blaming VAR or poor officiating for bad results? Because I am. And I'm the world's worst, by the way, for moaning about a decision. But at some point, I think we've got to hold ourselves accountable for putting ourselves in the position to moan about these decisions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, the Kudus one was a joke. You know, that was talked about, really. And that was clear, you know, push. There was no shoulder to shoulder. It was in his ribs, and he used all of his weight basically to take him out one-on-one with the keeper. That should have been a red card, you know. But Newcastle already had a depleted defence. You take him out, who's their best defender? They would have put, and that was in the first half as well. That would have put us in a much better position. So I do get what David Moyes is saying, because we all say it. You know, we all say it. We've sat here, we've already done it on this show, and we've done it most shows in the last, you know, pretty much every week we do it, where we talk about VAR and how much it screwed us. So I do understand that ultimately, you know, it pisses us off as fans. I can't imagine what it does to him in terms of his reputation and his, you know, his future and so on. So I do get why he's constantly frustrated about it. But I do also get your point, regardless of the fact that every decision seemed to want to go against us against Newcastle. That game, we should have put to bed way before, regardless of these decisions. And so he can't just completely hide behind VAR and officials all the time. The best thing for him to have said is the game changed on this, that and the other. However, when my team is 3-1 up and playing as we are, I don't expect us to throw that lead away regardless of what's going on. And I think he needs to take a sort of almost a 50-50 approach of it. It was a fuck up on the team's part and his part, and it was also a poor officiating day as well.
Absolutely. Well, a win against Tottenham would certainly soften that blow, wouldn't it? How'd you see that game going?
Oh, mate, it's so hard. It really is. And the thing with Tottenham as well is, whilst they're churning out results, you know, they seem to sort of struggle a bit and then manage to just about get out of it. You know, they put a goal down to, was it Luton they played this weekend? Yeah, I think so, yeah. And they seem to do that. So I think they've got vulnerabilities. You know, I much prefer them not having Kane, because Kane's always, you know, a thorn in our side. I think the game is there for the taking. If we play how we played against Newcastle, attacking wise, then we're going to score goals, because their defence is not going to be able to stop the likes of Pakistan, Kudus, Bowen. Because let's be honest, mate, I genuinely believe, when you look at all the teams in the Premier League, if you look at their front three, there isn't that many better than those three. So,
totally agree. Why do we play so fucking defensively all the time?
I know, this is a stupid thing. Attack is definitely the best form of defence for us at the moment, because we've proven our defence can't defend, and we've proven that our attack can attack. So, it does seem ridiculous not to, but at the end of the day, we scored 3 goals away at home at Newcastle. We scored 5 against Freiburg, you know, we scored 2 against Burnley. We're scoring goals, we just can't defend. So the best thing Moyes has got to do, he's got to abandon this, like, I'm a defensive based manager to start with, and just go out and say to Pakatar, Kudus, Bowen, and Antonio, you go out there and get goals. And then he's just got to hope that he can get that defence and keeper and defensive midfield to actually keep it less out. I'm stating the obvious, but less out than we score. But it's almost a bit like Newcastle in the 90s. I almost think we've got to go a little bit like that, because our best players are our attacking players. Clearly, in the summer, we need to invest heavily in defence, definitely. But for now, we can't do that. So whilst with the tools that he's got at his disposal, he needs to use the attacking players to be the ones to win the game. And we're just going to go out there and attack them. I hope the fans get behind us. You know, I think they will. We always do against Tottenham. If we start the game well, then I think we can get a result out of it. I don't want to be bold enough to say a win, but I'm going to say a positive result if we start the game well.
Yeah, it's always hard to know how your team's going to react after a game like that against Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because are they going to have the right hump and then they're going to be angry and play with hate and smash into them and you know, be desperate to win and come away with the win? Or are they going to be psychologically wounded by it and not be up for it? So that's the key, first and foremost, is where are they in terms of their headspace after that loss at Newcastle? And obviously Tottenham were 1-0 down. They turned it around to get the win. So, you know, is that going to, from their perspective, injects a little bit of complacency because they're just on the back of a win, or are they going to be, you know, smart enough to sustain their European campaign? Because that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to want to qualify for the Champions League, of course. So it's always tough to see what the respective teams are going to be doing on the day. But I absolutely agree. We have to be on the front foot. We have to have a go at them. I would take our final third over theirs any day of the week. So if you just take the science out of football, you know, the better attacking team that creates more chances and converts more chances is going to win the game. So that's what we have to do. We have to do it 100%. And it will really, really annoy me if it's clear and obvious, using the VAR reference there, that we're starting the game just sitting back. We've done that so many times. And then we find ourselves go a goal down, because then you could potentially see a toxic atmosphere pretty quickly because people have got the ump. And then before you know it, we've given ourselves a mountain to climb. I think that the way we approach that game is so important, so important. And let's just hope we can beat them, because there's nothing better than beating them. Well, on a brighter note, our next pre-match event has now been confirmed, X. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. It's got two different personalities, but two great lads and two keepers. You know, you've got the legend Phil Parks. If you was to ask any West Ham fan for their all-time 11, in my head, it's always a toss-up between Ludo and Phil, but most people would, because I never saw Phil play, but most people would go with Phil, I think, and he's always regarded as West Ham's best ever goalkeeper. You know, he won the 1980 FA Cup, was part of the 1986 record, you know, achieving season. So a great, you know, legend of the club to be there. Very outspoken on his opinions about modern football, about modern West Ham and the stadium and so on. So you know you're going to get an interesting opinion from him. You've also got Jimmy Walker, who anyone that listens to our, you know, patron shows in the past and our podcast that we've done with Jimmy knows that he's an absolutely hilarious character, full of great, great stories. Obviously a part of West Ham again during a really interesting time with promotion, FA Cup final and so on. So, you know, great escape season as well. So a great character, the two of them together will be really interesting. And then throw into the mix two other West Ham players that will be in attendance. Of course, Mad Dog Martin Allen as the host again, another iconic midfielder who's turned these events, taken them to the next level. You know, you always have that phrase, be careful what you wish for. But in this case, we definitely we did the, you know, have stepped them up a level by bringing in a new host. And then you look at we've got Sebastian Schemmel, former Hammer of the Year, who's just coming as a fan, who happens to be going to the game anyway. We've reached out to him, and he's going to be there just to watch the proceedings. Obviously, we'll probably get him up on stage for a round of applause and stuff. But, you know, you've got four ex-Hammers for the price of one, or the price of nothing if you're an ultra tier patron member, or a price of £10 if you're a patron. So anything, it's as we say, we've got the tickets with drink, we've got ticket without, so it cases for all people. 10 minute walks to the stadium. Why are you not there would be my question.
Absolutely. And it's before the Fulham game as well.
Yes.
So tickets are available. I think everyone knows how you can get them now, whether you're a patron or whether you're not. And it'd be great to see you there. I've got to say, on a separate note, just to keep things a little bit more lighthearted, as people know, we are currently sponsored by HelloFresh. And I have to say, right, people really should give them a go, you know, because, and by the way, this isn't part of the sponsorship now, because that's done at the beginning of the show. But they really are good. And they're offering a really good deal at the moment to listeners of this show. And I, honestly, X, I don't know about you, but I have probably 2 to 3 dinners from them a week now. And they're really tasty. And if you're not the best cook in the world, this is a really good way of making really tasty dinners really easily. And it's all fresh stuff as well, hence the name HelloFresh. So honestly, I really recommend people do it.
Yeah, I've been really impressed as well. You know, a couple of times I've had mates say to me, "Oh, yeah, you should sign up to this," because obviously they get a discount. I think if they get a mate to sign up and that, and I've never really bothered about it. But then because we were sponsored by them, I thought it makes sense for me to take up the code that we've got, which you might want to remind people of at some point. But take up that code and see what's on offer here, so I know what I'm talking about if it ever comes up. And actually, for me, someone that's not the greatest of cooks, but likes to think I am, getting the recipes. They're so easy to follow and so easy to make, because enhanced my reputation within my family in terms of being able to produce the meals, and of course it's made things easier for my wife as well when she's making them, because the ingredients are all there. So it's actually really good. It is really good value as well, and I'm glad I bit the bullet and gave it a go, and I think we're going to continue with it as a family, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And that code, I believe, is West Ham Way, but I say at the beginning of the show in a pre-recorded indent. So, yeah, check them out. That's cheered everyone up, isn't it? Just
this is what I did about lovely food and good events.
I've still got the ump about Newcastle. Let me hear about Dave and his fucking Korean noodles. That'll change everything.
Yeah, to be fair, there's not much we can talk about to distract from that Newcastle game. To be fair, I think even if we was to offer people the winning lottery tickets, still have that Newcastle game in the back of your mind. So yeah, it was a bit of a crushing one that, and it affected me as well. I did, maybe it was my own fault. I got a little bit cocky, but I've been to Newcastle 4 times before that, and I've seen West Ham win 3 times and only draw once. And I said to you during the game, mate, this is going to be like 4 out of 5 for me. So maybe I tempted fate by speaking too early, but it just couldn't see us not winning that game. So yeah, massive, massive disappointment. But if we beat Tottenham and you've given me the choice, you either lose at Newcastle or beat Tottenham, of course I'd want both to win both, but given the choice, I'd take a win against Tottenham. So let's hope we can, if we try to end on a positive, let's hope that we can do that and things will feel a bit more positive again.
Yeah, and speaking of positives, I think the majority of West Ham fans survived the climb to the seat at St James's Park, which is great news, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't heard of any people not making it. So, happy days.
That's the fucking worst walk ever, that, isn't it? I hard dread that when I go to St James's Park. I'm literally blowing out my arse. I'm literally ready for an iron lung by the time I get to my fucking seat.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
No, it's not. It's not. Right, okay. You know what time it is?
Calling all West Ham fans. Are you a patron of the West Ham Way? If not, why not? For the price of a pint, you get top quality content on a daily basis, to include the famous West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X, over 100 interviews with ex-players and celebrity fans, Mad Dog Bites with Martin Allen, a show with Tony Cotty, the U Irons podcast, the West Ham Way USA, a transfer window show with Demis Sheff, and expert pre-match analysis. There are virtual events with ex-players, written articles, match day discussion, away day burger reviews, in-depth match reports, and if you want to be the first to get reliable, accurate, exclusive news on all club affairs, you'll get exactly that from the best ITK in the business, ex-West Ham United employee. All that and more delivered to your phone for a fiver a month. It's the daddy.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18+, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.